are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 14th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you on ESPN 106.7. Gorgeous day once again here in the Auburn Opelika area. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I'll tell you what, man, I was busy this weekend. I was all over the place, on the air, hanging out with friends, hitting a golf ball, at a concert. I mean, I did it all. I think I lived the best life possible this weekend. And so, was it hard to get up this morning and go into work? Yeah, it was. But it's not hard to walk into the studio on a Monday afternoon when you have a weekend of college football like we just had. And I know we don't have Auburn to talk about from this past weekend, but I think the sport took care of itself, and we've got tons to get to on the show today. Plus, Hugh Freeze had his weekly press conference. We now flip the page into the back half of the schedule for Auburn as they get ready to take on Missouri on the road on Saturday. It is official. That will be an 11 a.m. kickoff there in Como. And so lots to get to on the show today, and I'm glad that you're with us. And no Uncle T-Bone today. He'll be back on Friday. But I'm not alone. Welcoming in the voice of Lee Scott Academy, Christian Griffin, joining me as he does a couple of days a week. I mean, I don't really know what your schedule is anymore, but you're in here a few days a week.
Nobody knows really the days, but happy to be in here, happy to be able to come in. This is the happiest the town of Auburn has been after a weekend of college football in
since August 31st.
Right, or since maybe the Alabama A&M game. You got to watch great football without having the stress of any time slot, not even being hoping that Auburn wins, but just not having the fear of Auburn losing again. And so having days and weekends like that make it to where every single game makes it that much more enjoyable. And man, what a slate. We talked about it on Friday, how the October 12th slate of college football was one that everybody had circled since May, since June, when everything came out and you were looking at it and you were just hoping that all of these games would have everything built up that was supposed to have. And man, did it live up to the expectations.
There's no doubt about it. And man, it wasn't just top 25 games. It wasn't even just the teams that were ranked. I mean, there were unranked games that were really, really good. Some crazy results around college football as well. And that's going to be a large focal point of our conversation today. We want to hear from you. What did you think about the results from college football this weekend? Phone lines are open today. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And I mean, you could throw all these games on a board, close your eyes, and just point and pick one. And there's storylines coming out of all of these. And I think the best way to start is to reiterate a point that we have made time and time again on this program, where one week, one singular week of results in college football does not indicate what's going to happen the next week, right? I think we've learned that through, what is this, week seven, week eight of college football now, that we cannot take a single game or a single week and apply it to the next game or next week, because that just hasn't, the carryover has not been there. And outside of, at this point, maybe three or four teams in college football, it has been proven that anybody at any time can beat somebody on a Saturday afternoon. And that is an awesome sight to see.
We've always heard the saying of in any given Saturday, especially here in the SEC, where you cannot overlook an opponent. You cannot overlook or look at your schedule and circle one team of, okay, we can only have 3 days of preparation because we know what's following the next week. No, it is, you have to give every single part of you every single Saturday, and it's not even in the SEC anymore. It is every single conference, and it helps when you've had some teams jump from conference to conference, but still wild hearing that Oregon and Ohio State is a Big Ten game. Like, it just feels so weird having to watch that. Or you go to the CBS and you're watching USC and Penn State
that
play with
so
Gary
gross.
Danielson. We listened to that on the way home, and it was just like, gosh, it feels so wrong.
Yeah. Well, looking around college football, the new AP poll is out today. It was out yesterday, technically. I'm not going to read through it all, but just to give you an idea of what we're looking at here, Texas is one. They held at the number one spot, which some people were surprised by, but, I mean, they're number one and they beat a top 25 team. So I don't really understand why you would move them off of that line. Oregon 2, we'll get to that in just a second. Penn State 3, we'll get to that in just a second. Ohio State 4, Georgia 5, Miami 6, Bama 7, LSU 8, Iowa State 9, Clemson at 10. There's a lot of storylines here. I'll give you the top 15 before we move on. Tennessee at 11, Notre Dame at 12, BYU 13, Texas A&M at 14, quietly at that 14th spot, and Boise State at the 15th spot. And so let's start this way. Your biggest result from the college football weekend, Christian. You'll give one. I'll give one. There's many that we can go through, and we want to hear from our listeners as well. 334-321-1390.
I mean, I think it's kind of what was highlighting the entire week was Oregon-Ohio State. It lived up to every expectation that it possibly had, going down to the last second quite literally, with Will Howard choosing to take two more steps before sliding down on Ohio State, not able to use that final timeout, trying to get in field goal range. You were kind of on the verge, but we've seen what happens with Ohio State in just a couple seconds left, trying to kick field goals, what they did against the University of Georgia. So can't say that it definitely would have worked out, but just a crazy scenario. How about back-to-back weeks of a play ending with a quarterback running instead of either heaving the ball down in the end zone or doing something else with the football, referring to last week with Tennessee and Arkansas. But what a wild game going back and forth, 32-31 Oregon. Everything that you could ask for in a college football game if you did not care who won.
It's a top five game that played out like a top five game. And Oregon squeaks it out 32-31. That game, of course, out in Eugene. And we posed the question last week. It wasn't one that I created. It was one that I borrowed. And I said, who needs a win more, Dan Lanning or Ryan Day? And I said Ryan Day. I think you agreed with me. Did you not? You said Ryan Day, or did you say Dan Lanning?
I don't know if I gave a true answer. I feel like it kind of
said Ryan Day.
He did. And I feel like with a big win, it's Ryan Day. I think Ohio State fans would trade a loss to Oregon with a win over Michigan, though, and that would help Ryan Day just as much.
It would, but like, look at what Michigan is. They're just barely inside the top 20. Michigan's not a top 25 team. I'm sorry.
No, but
they're
just
not.
Because of what's happened the past 2 or 3 years with how you cannot beat your top rival. I think arguably you could say Dan Lanning, just because you're moving into a new conference. Your physicality has been questioned all year. Finally, you host a prestigious college football team and you win. But regardless, going back to what you were saying, I don't think either coach lost this game in the minds of the media.
I don't know, man. For me, Ryan Day, that this game went down exactly the way I thought it would with Ryan Day as a coach, because he got outcoached at the very end of the ball game with 12 men on the field. Yeah. He got outcoached. Dan Lanning outcoached Ryan Day, a more talented, a more expensive football team, and Oregon beat them. Yes, it was by a point, and yes, this was in Eugene, but Oregon has beaten them twice. They beat them in Eugene and in Columbus. And Ryan Day got outcoached again. And that's what I said from day one when Ohio State hired Urban Meyer. Go back and listen to it. Or when Urban Meyer was done and they hired Ryan Day. Go back and listen to it. I said, I don't trust Ryan Day. He's going to take over one of the best programs that's ever been built. Right? One of the greatest teams that's ever been built. How does he do 4 or 5 years from now when Urban's players are gone? Well, thankfully for him, the NIL became a thing, and Ohio State's one of the most richest athletic departments in the country, so they've been okay in terms of talent. But find me a game where Ryan Day and Ohio State have coached themselves to a big-time win. I can't come up with one off the top of my head. And that's concerning to me for Ohio State. And so this game, the way that it ended, the way that it played out, and the way that Oregon won, I have big concerns for Ryan Day at Ohio State. Now, does it make me sad? Kind of makes me grin a little bit. But I'm just saying, Dan Lanning and Oregon not only won this football game, they won a lot more than that in my eyes. And Ryan Day at Ohio State, great concern for me, even though it was a one-point loss on the road in a top-five matchup.
What the way you're describing Ryan Day almost gives me the feeling of the public opinion of James Franklin. And ironically, they're on the other side of things where they actually won on the road 33-30 over USC.
We'll get there.
We will, but the way that you've described Ryan Day is kind of how you think of James Franklin with really good team every single year, a really good staff, but just can't seem to get over that hump and win the big game that you need to.
Even though he's been to the postseason. I mean, he's gotten there, but you can make the argument when you watch a game and how it played out Saturday night, it's like, man, if you had a better coach, better coaching wins that game for Ohio State. Better coaching probably wins that game by a touchdown if you're Ohio State. And that, if you're a Buckeye fan, has to be sickening, because you know who did win those types of games? Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer won those games. He won a national championship. Now, it was a decade ago, but they did. And so if you're an Ohio State fan, if it's me, I'm concerned. And I think they are becoming concerned because they've seen this story time and time again. Congratulations. You can beat a Maryland team who's terrible, who, by the way, just lost to Northwestern, got blasted by Northwestern on Friday night.
Woo!
But that's the type of thing that's been happening with Ryan Day. Great job to Dan Lanning, and props to him and that Oregon team for coming in, walking into the Big Ten, and punching the biggest giant in the mouth and saying, hey, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what Nick Saban said on College Game Day a couple weekends ago, where if you put your money in the wrong players, then your team is going to be nothing. I don't know if I can say exactly what Nick Saban said.
I can't quite remember. Yeah, what was it that he said? I don't.
You won't be set up for success. I think that was all that that the coach said.
Okay,
but,
well, I got you.
I guess this could kind of be week one. I mean, all the players did what they needed to do. I think it was, again, going back to it, if you did not care who won this football game, it is exactly what you wanted when you circled October 12th a couple of months ago.
And I've seen people, too, and I promise we're going to get to a lot of the other games here throughout probably the first hour of the show today. I've seen a lot of people, especially Ohio State fans, oh, this game didn't matter. This game didn't matter. Ohio State's still alive. They still have everything in front of them. College football playoff. Still going to happen for the Buckeyes. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
You're probably right.
But
there's no way on God's green earth you tell me that this game doesn't matter. Top five matchup, first time ever inside of a Big Ten conference, on the road, prime time. Everybody and their grandma watched this game Saturday night. You can't tell me this game didn't matter. When you lose it by one on the road, and again, you have a better coach, you probably win the game.
It's the exact same scenario that you had a couple weekends ago in Bryant Denny,
yep,
to where, although it did not officially matter, both of those teams are, well, Georgia is primed for a college football playoff run. We'll get to the other team later, but again, it's one of those games going into it, you look at it, even if you lose, it'll end up being okay. And you looked at it after the game, more people were impressed with Georgia and Kirby Smart just by how they were able to come back in the second half. That is what a coach that has been there, done that, and is able to do what he does did. He was able to get his team mentally prepared in the second half to take it drive by drive, and all of a sudden you saw the deficit slowly chip away. In this, it's the exact opposite, where it feels like Ryan Day just didn't give his guys, what's the saying here, putting your guys in position to win? That's all that it is.
I think that sounds familiar. I'm not too sure, though. I'll have to take a break and think about it for a few minutes, and maybe I can get back to you.
Maybe we can go back like one episode Because I'm sure it was talked about on Friday.
Oh, I'm sure it was. It definitely was. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. We want to hear from you on this Monday afternoon. Your thoughts on any game from college football this past Saturday. Lots more games to get to. A Friday night debacle out in Arizona. You've got the number one team in the country who looks like the number one team in the country. And a lot of big question marks inside that top 25. More on that when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. The Monday edition of On the Line continues as we are just breaking down any and all games in college football from this past weekend. One to remember, if you have thoughts or just takeaways from college football this weekend, give us a call, 334-321-1390. Got a text in the on-the-line text box that says, hook 'em. Hook 'em, because Texas, I said it going into break, the number one team in the country, Christian, looks like the number one team in the country. And I would put them and Oregon in the top echelon of college football because they are two teams that are undefeated, have proven that they are undefeated, and everybody else, Penn State should be in there, but I have thoughts on that in a second, okay? Penn State is, Texas and Oregon, I put them in the top two. Everybody else is beatable right now. Yeah. That's how I see it.
And it didn't look that way early on, especially with Oregon. Now, granted, we look at one of those close games being with Boise State, and we've seen what they've done since, where they only beat Boise State by a field goal. And again, you're seeing the Heisman front runner with Ashton Jeanty in that backfield for the Broncos. But now that Oregon has kind of figured everything out, they took the win against Oregon State, and now a win at home against Ohio State. Yeah, you throw them in the tier of 1A and 1B. Right now, especially if you're with Texas and Quinn Ewers, a healthy Quinn Ewers, you saw the way that he looked through the interception on the first play of scrimmage from Texas, and after that, just absolutely dominated. The defense looked really, really well, and for that offense to do what they did without Isaiah Bonds or a couple other guys on that team, again, they're playing with their third-string running back, essentially with the first two going out from injury before the season even started. Looking really, really good in that Red River rivalry. Minus 13.5 for entertainment purposes only was the easiest line of all time.
Boom. And Texas will have Georgia this week coming to Austin. And then back half of that schedule, not terrible for Texas, right? It is difficult because, as we just got done talking about, every team is good and everybody can beat anybody. But Vandy, kind of. Okay, in Nashville, hey-o, Florida at Arkansas, Kentucky at Texas A&M. On paper, in the past, you're thinking, Texas has got this. They're fine. They can't overlook any of those people.
And are you already giving your prediction for Saturday? You said that Texas looks like they're unbeatable. The dogs coming to town.
Georgia didn't impress me this weekend. They didn't impress me. And I don't know. Let's pose this question. Georgia beats Mississippi State, right? 41-31 final score. This was another SEC game that I said it's unacceptable, unbelievable, and downright disrespectful that it was a 30-something point line.
34.5. They were predicting Georgia to win by 5 touchdowns.
They did the same thing with Texas over Mississippi State. And guess what? The Dogs kept it close both times. So, shout out to them. So, my question is this. Does this performance, 41-31 final score, does it say more that Georgia is susceptible to a loss, which we've already seen, or does it say more about Mississippi State, even though they're 1-5, they've still got some dudes on that team?
I think if you're a Georgia fan,
Are you nervous?
I think you're nervous, but I think you'll also take this win because the biggest question mark has been the slow starts on the offensive side of the football and the inability for the passing game to really click. Carson Beck threw for almost 500 yards in that game on Saturday. I think they ran the ball like 16 times with Carson Beck just absolutely lighting up the Bulldogs. And granted, the Mississippi State does not have a very good defense this year. But with Georgia, I think you will take a you'll look at the final score and say, oh, we put up over 40 points against an SEC team. All things considered, I think you'll take it.
You were up 34-10 if you're Georgia. Remember, you were up 34-10 early in the second half. And then it seemed like the defense we saw in the Alabama game in the first half came back a little bit in the second half, where they allowed Mississippi State to score a couple of times, and then it was kind of back and forth, slowed down a little bit. Georgia eventually does win the football game. But look, we're going to talk to Jordan Hill later on this week from Dogs 247. If I'm a Georgia fan, I'm still not overly comfortable here. I'm not. But you have to look at this as a win, and any win is good in college football right now, especially in conference. And I'm just telling you, Mississippi State's going to get somebody.
Oh, for sure.
They're not going to go winless in the SEC. They're not going to do it. They're going to get somebody. A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Ole Miss. They will win one of those five games. I feel very confident in that.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that that's a bold statement to say, especially considering you have Arkansas, A&M, and Missouri all at home. Those could really come into play. And then the Egg Bowl, you really have no idea what happens. Lane Kiffin, for some reason, can't seem to comfortably win one of those Egg Bowls.
Or big games.
Why? Did something happen this weekend?
LSU stormed the field against Ole Miss and got drugged for it on social media, which I think is insane. I think that's absurd. Ole Miss went in to Baton Rouge as a top 10 team. LSU was the underdog, was not supposed to win, and they get the biggest win of the year for them. They beat a top 10 team. They eliminated Ole Miss from the playoffs, and LSU has everything in front of them. And now they got their marquee win, right? They made up for their loss in game one against USC, which was a top 25 team, which is now a 500 team, okay? So the loss doesn't look great. And you know me, Christian, I'm not one on good losses.
Yeah.
That's a stupid term.
There's a one in the tally of a loss column.
You lost. I don't care if it's to the Broncos or if it's to App State. You lost. And so LSU celebrated the way they did because they got their marquee win. Now, they've got chances for more. They have a lot of chances for more. But LSU season is still alive, and they won it in dramatic fashion in overtime. I had buddies that were at this game down in Baton Rouge. They said it's the best game they've been at all year.
And, again, I mean, you've seen the videos on social media of their light shows and the calling the Tigers down to Baton Rouge.
It's
and
awesome,
everything.
Man.
It is an absolutely amazing environment, as it is just about every single night game in Baton Rouge. As an Auburn fan, I don't like it. As a college football fan, I love it that Brian Kelly has brought that back to where Death Valley at night is now a scary place to go, because there were a couple years to where it was eh, but it's gotten back. And I saw that they read a stat that said that Brian Kelly hadn't lost a night game now in Baton Rouge. And
has he lost a game in general in Baton Rouge? Maybe like one?
It's a great question. I feel like that would have been the statement if he hadn't. You're still That's undefeated
fair.
In Tiger Stadium.
Yeah.
Instead, it's
I don't know
night.
Off the top of my head. I don't.
I think the best stat from that game.
Again, LSU wins 29-26 in overtime.
Is this was on the SEC broadcast on ABC. The Ole Miss Rebels.
This ought to be good.
I'm showing this to you right here. This
no,
was
a legitimate
from
graphic.
The broadcast.
Yeah. Okay.
This is a graphic that they showed
I hadn't seen this.
On screen that said Ole Miss Rebels have 29 stoppages due to injury in the last three games against Power 4 teams.
Holy smokes.
29 stoppages. Now, granted, we are not someone to harp on injuries, but I think that when you look and you think of teams that are notoriously known for, ah, oh, dang it, a team got back-to-back first downs. Go down. Oh, dang it, he's hurt.
Oh, he's hurt.
Give us a timeout. I think you think of the Ole Miss Rebels. And granted, every team does it. Every team has their own little thing where they've gotten...
Auburn's been caught before.
Right, and that's what everybody's been caught by doing something. But for a national broadcast to have that graphic of, man, it's crazy how injury prone they are. And then the guy's back two plays later. Just, man, they must not be in great shape in Oxford. Just a whole lot of cramps going on.
I mean, hey, Lane, change the strategy, bro. It ain't working. You're still losing ball games. You're still losing to good teams. And so my question to you quickly as we get to break, I mean, how do you feel as an Ole Miss fan? You have possibly the best team you've ever had going into the season. Expectations were high. You were thinking national championship for this team. And you may have just been eliminated in the second week of October. Oof. Ooh.
Oklahoma, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, and Mississippi State, that remaining back half of the schedule for the Ole Miss Rebels. You saw Jackson Dart channeling his, I don't know if he was trying to do Anakin Skywalker. It felt to me like a, hey, make sure the cameras get this, but said, we got to win out. There's no other choice. But at this point, with Kentucky and LSU, you lose another one, you're done.
Lots more games to get to here on the Monday edition of On the Line College Football. It was awesome this weekend. We're talking more about it after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin in the studio with me on this Monday afternoon. And before we get back to some more college football, it was on my side of town, it was an exciting Friday night.
It was tougher. College football, man, we love it.
Tougher scene on Academy Drive, unfortunately. Not to go super deep into this, but yeah, just to update what's going on around locally with our high school football coverage. I've got Auburn High, you've got Lee Scott, and history was unfortunately made for you guys for a little bit. I mean, something that just doesn't happen at Lee Scott very often in terms of what happened on Friday night.
Yeah, it is the first time since September of 2020 that Lee Scott had dropped back-to-back games, and during that same time, so I guess now the same trend continues. It's the first time since September of 2020 that the Warriors have dropped three straight contests.
Gosh, man.
And again, with us calling it, or you calling it last year, I was with you. It's something that just hasn't been experienced in 4 or 5 years. Like, it's a very weird vibe that goes on right now. And again, most of these players haven't experienced it. These coaches haven't experienced it. The fans of those players haven't experienced it. And so when you're dealing with something like that that just has not been dealt with by, I mean, again, all four, even if you were a senior and you played your freshman year on varsity, you don't know what this feels like.
Right.
It is a very weird feeling, and this one was a heartbreaker because you looked on the offensive side of the football, I would say you looked about as good as you have all year. And that was really where the priorities lied for Lee Scott and Coach Daniel. They said that the biggest thing, other than tackling an open space, was finding ways to sustain drives and turn zeros into threes and threes into sevens. And did a really, really good job until about halfway through the fourth quarter, where you went three and out twice. That turned into 16 unanswered points. And Wadley scored a touchdown to start the fourth quarter. Went for the two-point conversion to make it a touchdown game at that point. It was 28-21, and then scored another touchdown with about 3 or 4 minutes remaining. Went for the two-point conversion, got it. Took the lead 29-28. Lee Scott drove down the field, attempted a field goal, and it was blocked to pretty much seal the deal for the game on Friday.
Good news is it was not a region game.
You're right.
So at the end of the day, it doesn't impact what Lee Scott is able to do in terms of getting to the postseason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've got to figure out a way to turn it around. And you know, we knew there were going to be growing pains, right?
Right.
I mean, there were going to be growing pains going from private school ball to public school ball. Mm-hmm. And even with Wadley, who is 1A compared to Lee Scott being 3A, that's an undefeated Wadley team with a 6'5" running back that came up to town. So it was a little bit different. And so, look, I covered that program long enough. The coaches over there know what they're doing.
For sure.
And they're extremely talented, and there's a lot of good kids there. They will figure it out. It just, yeah, it's different times right now.
That's all that it simply is. It's a tough loss, but it's one that I think you will learn a lot from. I think you learn more from this one than I think you did in the other ones. When you played Randolph County, that offense was just a buzzsaw. That was one of those losses where you kind of just got back on the bus and you were, oh, man, okay, that was a very good team. And then the Dadeville loss was the one that kind of stung the most. but you still felt like you did enough to win the football game. It just wasn't a pretty football game all the way around. In this game against Wadley, you feel like you can go back and circle one or two plays that you really just had to get either the guy in the right spot or the receiver had to run a little bit deeper of a post that he was supposed to and hang on to the football rather than it being tipped and falling incomplete, things like that. So I agree with you. Things will get worked out. Everything will work out. And no better way than a rivalry game this Friday night where records simply don't matter in rivalries. We know it with high school football, NFL, it does not matter if you're 0-12 or 12-0 or I guess 11 at that point, where you're facing different colors. You're facing your rival team. It does not matter what your record is, what their record is. You're going to go out, and because that team is playing on the other side of the field, you're going to do everything you can.
Lee Scott at Glenwood this Friday. Your first Lee Scott-Glenwood football game, yeah, other than the state championship last year, right? This is your first regular season game. You get to make the lovely trip to Phoenix City and take on the Gators over there at Glenwood. So looking forward to hearing you guys catch that one on Friday. For myself, Auburn High, we continued to roll on Friday, took down Smith Station. Got scared for a moment. Smith Station, on the third play of the game, took a 67-yard run up the middle, found a gaping hole, and took it to the house. And we were like, oh, okay. Like, all right, here we go. Auburn blocked the PAT, responded with a touchdown, and that was it. Auburn ends up winning 70-6. That's a lot of points. And so Auburn continues to do their thing. We are at Carver Montgomery this Friday. That is at Crampton Bowl. If the Tigers win, they secure a region championship. So looking forward to that. Hopefully we can make that happen. It's a very talented Carver team. Luckily, as a broadcaster, I'm 2-0 at
Crampton. I was about to say, we've done pretty well in Crampton Bowl.
I've been okay down there. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be on Friday. No Rob Pate this week. He'll be gone watching his daughter play volleyball at ECU. So jumping Jack Cunningham, I'll have the call for you on Friday evening. We'll have more information as we go throughout the week. All right, back to college football, because so many more games to get to. And I want to go on to Penn State for a second here.
Yeah.
I said it last week. I'll say it this week. Penn State has not proven to me that they are a top five team in college football. I didn't think they were fourth last week. I don't think they're third this week. In terms of what I've seen on the field, I'm not arguing with the results. Kind of. I'm not arguing with what I've seen or what you see on paper. Okay. That's a Penn State squad that is 6-0. That has a win over a top 20 Illinois team, which, by the way, they just had to escape Purdue. Purdue, who's terrible.
50-49.
What a weird game, man. In the Big Ten, is that a record? You also had to beat UCLA, who's bad, and beat USC, who looked good early in the year, but is now a 500 squad. You struggled with Bowling Green, struggled with West Virginia. I'm not sold on Penn State. I'm not. I don't think they're a top five team in college football. And here's the problem. We're only going to get to see them against one legitimate team. It's Ohio State, and it's at home.
I was about to say the same thing. Unfortunately, they're not going to have the two or three ranked games to really, really get tested. They do go to Purdue, and despite the history this year of Purdue, the history overall of the Boilermakers, on a random Saturday where they welcome a ranked team, for some reason, there's always something crazy that goes on there. But if they're able to knock off the Boilermakers, yeah, the rest of their schedule at Wisconsin, then you host Ohio State, you host Washington, you go to Purdue, then Minnesota, and you finish with Maryland. So, I mean, you maybe two, possibly even three games to where it's even you even search Penn State to see what the final score is. Other than that, I mean, you're not going to hear much about them after the Ohio State game.
Penn State are frauds. I'm just telling you. They are. I'm not sold on them. And guess what? James Franklin's still the head coach, so they'll lose to Ohio State. And when they still get into the playoff, they'll play somebody halfway decent, and they'll lose that game too. So until they prove to me, Christian, that they are legitimate on offense and defense and can put teams away like they're supposed to, I'm not buying in to what Penn State is selling. A couple of more games that happened in the SEC. Again, we'd love to get your thoughts on all these. 334-321-1390. Your takeaways, your biggest takeaways from college football this weekend. Are Alabama fans nervous yet? Are they starting to feel a little worried about Kalen DeBoer? am his new era at Alabama after, yes, we know they lost to Vanderbilt, and they almost lost to South Carolina at home, 11 a.m. kick. It was in Bryant-Denny. I'll give them credit, and T-Bone's not here today. Fans showed up. It was a pretty full stadium there Saturday. And look around most college football places on a Saturday at 11 a.m. They normally don't sell out all the upper deck seats, okay? But they did not put on a good performance for those 100-plus thousand people that showed up in Tuscaloosa on Saturday morning. How many times have we said this about a team this year in college football? They had every chance to win it, did South Carolina. Every chance in the world to win it. I think talent just got them. I think talent outmatched them in this football game. Talent emerged in a game like this, and South Carolina just couldn't find a way to win the game.
It was the tale as old as time where I truly don't believe that Alabama beat South Carolina. It was the fact that South Carolina beat South Carolina. Halfway, or with 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter, with the SEC or the ESPN win probability, South Carolina was over 65%.
Which is pretty darn good on the road at Alabama.
It took 13 points by Alabama in the fourth quarter and a failed two-point conversion by South Carolina for that game not to either be lost or go into overtime. South Carolina had so many chances. I mean, Milroe threw an interception in the end zone. It was a touchback. Two plays later, South Carolina fumbles, and that's what kind of starts everything for Alabama. It took a really nice drive by South Carolina. In the final minute, they go down and score. They two-point conversion fails. They get the onside kick. We were sitting there. We weren't watching the game, and I saw that the two-point conversion failed, and we both kind of sat there, ah, dang it, it's over. Then all of a sudden, you got the notification that this game's not over. South Carolina got the extra, or got the two,
the onside kick. Yeah.
And it was, oh man, now they only need 20 yards and they're in field goal range. And then again, you mismanage the clock, you throw a completion inbounds, and then it goes down to a Hail Mary. It gets intercepted. Did you see the end of that?
Yes, I did.
Where the official threw the beanbag to where if that possibly would have been kneeled down in the end zone, they might have said that was not momentum that carried him into the end zone and could have been a safety. What a wild ending that would have been.
But regardless, Alabama has to escape against South Carolina. Escape because the Gamecocks couldn't find a way to get it done. A team that had a lead for a lot of this game, or at least was tied or around. I mean, man, Alabama fans have to be concerned here because the secondary is as bad as I've seen it at Alabama in a long, long time. And I'm looking at their schedule right now. They play Nico in Tennessee this weekend, which, we'll get to that one. They didn't look great, but if they let it fly, they've got a chance. They play Missouri with Brady Cook, who they haven't looked great. Auburn's got to find out this weekend, but he's a quarterback that will let it fly. And then Garrett Nussmeier, who Jack Hutton loves, is going to let it fly on that Alabama defense. And those are the three games they play in sequential. Is that how you say that? Back-to-back-to-back weeks, okay? Tennessee on the
consecutive
road.
Consecutive.
That's a great way to say that. Yeah. Why did I go for the overcomplicated word? Like, anyway, at Tennessee this weekend, all right, third Saturday in October, Alabama, Tennessee. Then they host Missouri Is there a bye week in there? Looks like there is. Is there a bye week in between Missouri and LSU? Yes, there is.
The second one of the year for them.
So in the next 4 weeks, they play at Tennessee, home versus Missouri, bye week at LSU. I was having a conversation earlier today. Christian, Alabama's going to lose one of those games. The way they're playing right now, Alabama will lose one of those three games. And if they do, I won't dare say they're not in the playoffs because we know how that works and the committee's going to put them maybe even if they have eight losses. But they will be a two-loss team, and that could be by the first weekend of November.
It's crazy that the newcomer is the only, or one of the two newcomers being the University of Texas, is the only undefeated team in the SEC right now. They are sitting at 6-0, and there are only three teams that are undefeated in conference play. Texas, obviously. LSU. Can you guess the third one?
Texas A&M.
Texas A&M. Who thought
the
that we'd say
assassin,
that?
Man.
The one that Jacob Goins put his house on that they would not get 6.5 wins.
Is that true? Somebody go back and check that just to make sure.
I mean, it could still happen. They could finish. They could finish 6-6.
You know what else could still happen? Auburn could still get 8 wins if Auburn wins out, because that's what my other house is on. I'm about to be down 2 houses this college football season.
Golly.
Because A&M so far is overperforming, and Auburn is definitely underperforming. But yeah, how about Texas A&M? I mean, what in the world's going on in Aggieland? Everybody, myself included, wrote them off after what was a pitiful performance, right, in the early going this season, in the season opener. And since then, they've just quietly handled business. They'll probably do the same this weekend. You would think, could this be one of those games that Mississippi State jumps up and gets somebody? That would be very A&M-like.
Oh, one very.
But their schedule's not overly difficult until the very end. Here's what Texas A&M has left. At Mississippi State, home versus LSU. Think about how big of a game that could be. You're looking at top 15 matchup if A&M wins this week.
And that's not the only one.
Next week?
No, I'm saying for
Texas
A&M. I mean,
right. At Mississippi State, home for LSU, which, if things go well, top 15 game. At South Carolina, home versus New Mexico State.
And
you
then
come to Auburn. Okay. And then
what could be the game of the year?
What could be the game of the year? The atmosphere of the century. I'm not big on Texas A&M's atmosphere. I think it's overrated, but they will be going absolutely ballistic for this game. When, if everything goes right, the number one team in the country, a rivalry reborn, when the Longhorns of Texas come to town to Aggieland for what possibly could be a top 10 matchup to go or win or whatever in the SEC. Who knows what's going to be up for grabs at that point, and by no means am I going to try and sit here and predict what that's going to be in the next, 6 weeks? But my God, what a great game that would be.
The last time those two teams played, November 24th, 2011.
It's been that long?
It has been 13 years since the in-state rivals have played each other, and now back together. The band is back together. The boys are back in town hosting the same patch over that left chest, or the left side of their chest. The SEC logo.
Sure.
Somewhere on the jersey, right?
Somewhere there.
But what a game that could be, unless Texas A&M does what their history and what we know them to do.
I mean, Jimbo's not there, so we can't blame it on him anymore.
Dang it, yeah.
That was always the easy way. Jimbo's going to screw it up. Same way Lane Kiffin screws it up. Same way James Franklin screws it up. Same way Ryan Day screws it up. Same way. Nope, not going there. 334-321-1390. We got to get to break. We'll wrap up hour number one. More Auburn talk as we will look ahead to what's coming up for the Tigers. Coming out of the bye week, man. Did we learn anything? I don't know. We'll find out. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We're on a roll today, man. We are having a lot of fun on a Monday afternoon. And, hey, I promise we're going to start talking some Auburn football when we get back in hour number two. Got a great text in the on-the-line text box that we need to address. That is 334-784-1067, so be sure you get in on that. Had our boy Texas and say Texas versus Texas A&M is crazy great. And the fact that I know we're 6 weeks away from that, but we're still not talking about it. Here's the problem, though. I said this earlier, and I'm saying it again. It is impossible right now, given how the college football season has played out to this point, it's impossible to try to predict what any game in November is going to look like or what implications it will have on it at this point, because things can get turned on their heads immediately. I mean, look, Tennessee took overtime to beat a bad Florida team in Knoxville, okay? A game where Tennessee played horrible. They played terrible. Yeah, they won, but they played terrible, right? LSU takes down Ole Miss. There's still a good chance LSU could lose between now and however many games. Alabama's the same way. Georgia's the same way. Like, this conference, the SEC in particular, Christian, it's just, it's wide open right now, which is awesome.
It almost feels, if you're comparing anything to with football to SEC basketball. Like, there's a really weird comparison of how deep all of these teams are and how you can no longer circle any opponent in a Tuesday afternoon to be, you know, you're Auburn's hosting Vanderbilt before they head to Knoxville on Saturday. You can't take that Vanderbilt team light just because of what the entire conference is able to do now. And we've talked about it where SEC basketball this year is going to be wild. SEC football is the same way. Will there be an undefeated team at all in conference play? Will there be an undefeated team at all in the regular season? Texas is the only one that even fits the conversation of totally undefeated. Only three teams in conference play. I mean, how weird is it that it could get the new norm could be 10-2 versus 10-2 playing in the SEC championship?
Rather than, oh, if you don't go undefeated, then you had a bad season.
Right. It's a wild, wild concept. We hinted at it a while ago with Kirby Smart and everything saying that, you know, you can't stack kids anymore. You can't just sit there and stack lineups. NIL and the transfer portal is doing everything, evening everything out, and the SEC standings and the SEC as a whole. The any given Saturday mentality is a perfect example of it.
Hour number one in the book. Stick around. We'll talk Auburn football, maybe some Auburn basketball coming up in hour number two. Plus, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will be with us at 3:30. So we'll talk to him a lot about basketball, lots of news from that side of things. So stick around. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Hope you're doing well on what is, a perfect day, really, in Auburn, Alabama. So it's going to be in the 60s this week. Oh, I got a flannel on today. May wear a sweatshirt sometime this week. Man, tell you what. October. Feeling good out there in the Auburn Opelika area. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast version of the show. You can find it on our station website, which is ESPNAU.com. You can find a lot of things there. Our podcast is there. Our SEC Football Challenge is there. Be sure you get your picks in for that every Friday by midnight. So be sure you do that. In hour number one, Christian Griffin and I talked all things college football, all the biggest results, all the biggest storylines, everything that happened over what was probably the best weekend so far of college football. And so that was in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we're going to talk some Auburn football coming out of the bye week. Hugh Freeze had a press conference today. We have some questions in the on-the-line text box. So going to get to that in hour two. And then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us. Talk a lot of Auburn basketball. New AP poll came out today. Ken Pom's out today. Tip-off at Toomer's is this week. I mean, got a lot going on around Auburn basketball. So that's coming up later on in the hour as well. Phone lines are open until then, though. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the 3 to 4 o'clock hour each and every day here on ESPN. And speaking of the Orthopedic Clinic, they are also the sponsor of our High School Player of the Week. And this week's Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week is Opelika High School's Reese Beasley. The Bulldogs kicker had three big field goals on Friday night from 41, 32, and 26 yards out, along with three extra points as Opelika took down Enterprise 30-13. And if you're familiar with how that region's going down right now, that is a huge, huge win for the Opelika Bulldogs. Their only loss on the season was by one score to Auburn High. So Opelika doing big things right now. Reese Beasley, your Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. We appreciate them sponsoring that each and every week here on ESPN. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, Jacob, this is Andy. War Eagle.
Yes, sir. What's going on, Andy? How are you?
Good. Hey, I caught the beginning of the show, then pretty sad but funny how this was a great weekend for us Auburn fans.
It's convenient, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, that's so terrible but true. You know, we didn't have to worry about or be upset. But then I had to work on my golf cart. Man, have you ever picked up a golf cart battery?
No. Is it like a car battery?
Except like 150 pounds more. And,
oh, my gosh. Why does it have to be that big? It's a golf cart.
It's got to be a deep charge to, you know, a car has alternator that helps it. But I learned, don't put your fingers in those holes that you pour the water in, or your fingers will start fizzing from that.
Andy, aren't you too old to be learning things the hard way like that, my man?
I'm just starting. This is part of the deal. If I got to work from home, I got to change the oil and get all these bloody knuckles.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah, I don't know if you covered this when I was getting acid all over me. I had to stop listening. But, you know, I hit a big parlay, $600 parlay with Arkansas. It would have been a lot bigger. The easiest bet was that Texas-Oklahoma. And it was just frustrating watching Oklahoma struggle because that's how they should have been against us. And if it wasn't for that bomb and a few things, I mean, we would have won that game. That was such a heartbreaker to watch.
True.
Because Texas did it so easy. But that was the easiest bet of my life. And then kind of got a little lucky with Arkansas. I didn't know what to take. I took Florida. That was a lot of points. I would have hit a bigger parlay if Ohio did what I was supposed to. But, again, a great program like that, knucklehead quarterback doing what he did, that's going to happen. You know, that made me feel a little bit better. But, again, I'm just glad he's doing some recruiting so we can keep our heads above the water and stay positive and still smile and cheers. But now I'm listening to you, so I'll keep on enjoying the show.
All right, appreciate the call, man. 334-321-1390. Always enjoy hearing from Andy, very loyal listener here on the line. Let's talk a little Auburn, Christian, because coming out of the bye week, as Andy said, a lot of Auburn fans had a pretty good weekend because Auburn didn't lose. And so the question has become, right, the question has become, okay, bye week, reset, time to move forward, forget about the first six games, and let's see what can happen in the backstretch. And beginning of the season, we looked at this backstretch and said, okay, it's not that bad, right? At Missouri could be tough because they could be good, and I think they're still a good team. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're playoff good right now, but they're still good. Kentucky, depends on which Kentucky you get. Do you get the one that almost beat Georgia, or do you get the one that embarrasses themselves when they play teams, right? What Kentucky do you get? Then there's Vanderbilt, which, of course, everybody wrote off Vanderbilt because that's what we do. And then they start out the season 4-2. Okay, stop. Stop. You did not have Vanderbilt 4-2 through six games with a win over Alabama. You just had them winning three games because they won their final non-conference game in the second weekend of November. Nobody had this one circled on Auburn's schedule thinking, watch out, except for Diego Pavia, which has come to fruition. So my point being, the back half of the schedule didn't look all that bad. But the problem is, now it kind of does. With Missouri still being top 20, with Kentucky being a really good defensive squad, Vanderbilt being Vanderbilt, A&M being the top team in the SEC right now, according to the standings, and Alabama still being on that schedule. So what does Auburn do coming out of the bye week? That's the big question that everybody's asking.
Well, I don't know if I have the answer, but I really hope that I have the answer, and it's three words. You want to hear them? Run the football. I think that's, you know, it's a simple game, right?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Right, yeah. So let's phrase it where you have the best running back in the SEC.
I do?
Yes. Okay. You do. Cool. He's only the most times he's ever touched the ball in a game is 20. So you're good. You did a good job.
Okay.
It's what Auburn has to do. If Auburn comes out and does the exact same offensive formula that they've done the first 6 weeks of the year, the back half is going to look exactly the same as the first half did. If not, even worse. But if Auburn makes a little bit of a change and allows Peyton Thorne and Jarquez Hunter to go back to the rushing offense that I think Peyton Thorne feels a little bit more comfortable in, I think you're going to see a little bit more success. Look at what Texas A&M did against Missouri a couple weeks ago, where they ran for over 200 yards and just made them look like they had never defended the run before.
Yeah.
That is what I pray that Auburn took into that bye week and learned and established themselves all week long, and then let it all of a sudden be, oh, here's a play action pass. Let me remind you that we still have Keandre Lambert-Smith. We still have Cam Coleman. We still have Robert Lewis. We still have Camden Brown. But don't make it where it's all of a sudden, it's first and 10. Let's throw the ball deep. Oh, it's second down and 10. Let's try and throw the ball deep. Oh, it's third and 10. I guess we have to throw the ball again. And then all of a sudden you force your defense to play 45 minutes of time of possession.
Well, it gets back to this text that we received earlier in the show. 334-784-1067 is the On the Line text box. And the question is Auburn going to run the ball this weekend? He says, Auburn fans have been hearing from Freeze for 3 weeks now. Quote, yeah, we got to get 27 the ball, end quote. He says, what has Hugh Freeze done that makes him better than Ryan Day and Kiffin? Not 100% where that's coming from. But what was his last big game that he's won? And says, I'm still pulling for him. But the main point of this question is Auburn going to run the ball? And guess what? Hugh Freeze said it again today, that 27 has to touch the football more. And I'll say this too, and I'm not trying to go negative Nancy here, but I'll tell you what I'm tired of hearing is Hugh Freeze sitting on a podium and a microphone and saying we have to coach them harder. Why are you telling us that? You saying that does absolutely nothing. It covers your own you-know-what. That's what it does.
It's the same thing as hearing we need to run the football more.
Do it! Like, I don't get it. It's like, you know, I really need to do my laundry. I don't have any boxers to wear. I need to do my laundry. Okay.
Hey, Jacob, why haven't you done your laundry?
I need to do my laundry. Not because all the washers are full, not because we're out of dish soap, not because we don't have the time. I just need to do my laundry.
Man,
doesn't that sound so stupid?
If it's been 3 weeks since you've done your laundry, then
you should probably do your laundry. Like, come on, man. If I can figure that out, then we should be able to figure out how Auburn should run the football and coach them harder and coach them better. And look, I talked to Eugene Asante earlier today. We'll have that interview for you on the drive on Wednesday for Tiger Takes. And I talked about it with him on and off the mic. And it was like, look, we've taken responsibility for this and the fact that, yeah, we have to execute, but we've got to hold ourselves to that standard, not just, right, not just in the meetings, but not just in your dorm or whatever. It's like, man, when you're in practice, like, you have to hit that, set the standard, and then hit the standard. And I feel like, Christian, that's where Auburn is falling short. I don't think Auburn has a problem with what they want to do or knowing what they want to do or what they're supposed to do, because everybody I've heard, whether it's Hugh Freeze, whether it's a coordinator, an assistant coach, or any player on that roster, everybody says the right things, and I believe that they believe it. But there's a problem at Auburn. After they've set the standard, they're not getting there, which means something isn't working. And Hugh Freeze said they changed up their practice schedule this week. They've changed some things, and maybe it'll work. But good for them for going into the bye week saying, okay, we're 2-4. What we're doing is not working. Let's look in the mirror. and let's try to figure this thing out.
Is it the word insanity where people talk about it, where it's you continue to do the same thing over and over and expect something to change without you changing anything?
Yeah, people get it mixed up with, they say insanity, and they also say, do they say stupidity?
Maybe that's what it is.
I think it's insanity, though.
In this situation, you could say it goes hand in hand with, sure, with those two things. Yeah. And what you were talking about is kind of the, by no means do I want to sound like my grandfather, but that's what's wrong with the world today. Everybody knows what needs to be done, but nobody's actually willing to go out and do it.
I mean,
and it's nice, I guess. We haven't seen a true result, but so far it's nice to have heard that things have changed and that they took it upon themselves within the program, within the players, within the staff to go and make those changes that they've been calling for the past couple of weeks. And if you mentioned it, talking about changing the practice schedule, changing the way that they went about doing things rather than getting back into that same routine where
another week,
right? And then at the end of the week, you see the same result, and it slowly begins to fall into a rhythm where right now, with what you've seen, you don't want to be in that rhythm through the first 6 weeks.
And that applies to life too, man. I mean, think about it. Think about in your everyday life, whether you're at work or it's with your family or your health or your laundry, right? I mean, if you do the same thing over and over and over again and you're getting basically the same results, nothing is going, like, an angel's not going to walk through and say, oh, here it is, here's your gift, here's the change you've been looking for. That's just not how it works. No. And so it's not easy. It's not comfortable to do something different. But if you start doing something different will happen. Will it be what you want it to be? I don't know. That's what you got to find out. But what I can promise you, and to put this back on Auburn, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're not going to win football games. And that is a huge problem this year.
I think you said it on the golf course today or yesterday where...
Yeah, I didn't play today.
No, but yesterday when we went out and played, where you said, if you putt the ball and you never hit it with enough power to get to the hole, that's not going in.
My dad always told me, if you leave it short, it has a 0% chance of going in.
It's the same thing. If you continue to do the exact same thing every single day in life, nothing is going to change.
And it's simple. Auburn has to change it up. If they want to get out of this rut of being 2-4 and go into the back half of a schedule that, yes, is tough, but it's not unbearable, Auburn can be a solid football team. I believe that.
It's a solid TED Talk segment we've got going on here with...
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah. How'd you putt on Sunday as well, man? You didn't...
How did I putt?
Yeah, I didn't lip out or anything, right?
No, not at all. I didn't... Well, I was almost going to say I didn't leave a putt short. I did leave one putt short. The birdie putt I had, I left it short. On 18, which is great. That's fantastic. I did hit, though, by the way. I probably hit the ball the best I've ever hit it, so...
Yeah, it drove me for the first time.
Maybe forever. Maybe ever.
Yeah. No, there was a period there for the first time.
Oh, geez. All right, we need to get to break. 334-321-1390. We're talking more college football, maybe some college basketball. When we come back, reminder, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will be with us coming up shortly. That's all here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Rolling on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Christian Griffin in the studio with me today. No Uncle T-Bone. He'll be back on Friday. And before we get to Jacob Hillman, he'll be with us in about 10 minutes or so. How about a little basketball that we need to talk about for Auburn today? Because it feels like today really started to feel like basketball season, and no, not just because of the nice weather outside, but AP poll is out today, KenPom is out today, we got it all, right? We got everything we need to get ready for this upcoming college basketball season, and Auburn's getting a lot of love, depending on where you look. AP poll, they're 11, KenPom, they're number 3.
And I feel like that's where Auburn has always really shined, is the KenPom, because of those defensive statistics that Auburn's prided themselves on over the past couple of years, especially, I mean, that's what Bruce Pearl prides himself on in general. And KenPom puts such a factor of the defensive rating. And so that's why teams like Auburn and Tennessee are always so high up there because of how they play on the defensive side of the ball.
I agree. And, you know, the KenPom and the net rankings and things like that, I was talking about this on a different show, and I was saying I like college basketball because of those types of rankings. They're pure numbers based. Are they everything? No. And that you'll start to hear us talk about that some more once we get into basketball season. You know me, I'm big on the eye test. That is everything to
me. It's everything.
But numbers are so fascinating in college basketball. That's why Jack loves baseball, because and you guys like who love baseball love it, because there's just billions of different numbers that you can use. But I like that the NCAA tournament uses three or four different ranking systems, KenPom and the net and the AP and things like that, to make an educated decision, rather than the college football playoff where 12 people get behind a door, they eat sandwiches, and they just decide what's going to make them the most money when the ESPN exec tells them, right? That's how that goes down. Let's not kid ourselves here. And so what I like about the tournament is you can look at offensive rating, defensive rating, luck factor. Like, all of that is a thing. And I know that it's preseason, so we cannot buy into this a whole lot. Auburn's third in KenPom, but you may be asking yourself, okay, what are they basing that off of?
Right.
Well, last year's numbers, returning players, transfer players at their previous schools. I mean, all of that plays a factor here. The AP poll, Auburn is right outside looking in 11. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe they are number 11 in the AP poll today. Alabama's a top five team. And I think that Auburn will get there at some point this year. But regardless, this is a really, really good team.
It is. It's a very good team. Going back to what you were talking about, where it would never, ever happen because there's so many conversation points and so much money that's made off of preseason rankings. But especially now with transfer portal and with everything happening year after year, it's so hard to base something off of, well, this happened last year, and this basketball team is returning six of their players. Just so many different things that can go into it. But if we are looking at the AP poll right now, and you're looking at the non-conference schedule, not even going into SEC play, where there are plenty of teams ranked in the AP top 25, number four, Houston, number five, Iowa State, number seven, Duke. So that's three of the top 10 teams that you're playing in non-conference. Then you go to Purdue, who's ranked 14th, and that's not including the teams you could possibly play in the Maui tournament after your first two games. Just a crazy non-conference slate. And then obviously we know the SEC slate doesn't get any easier right now. Texas is at 19, Tennessee is at 12, Ole Miss is at 24, Florida 21, Alabama's ranked 2nd, Arkansas at 16, Kentucky at 23, and Texas A&M at 13. It feels like just about every single game, if you're playing two games a week, you're playing a ranked team one or the other games.
And I love it. I love that the SEC has become that in college basketball. It has become legitimately a top two or three conference, depending on what the Big Ten does, depending on the Big East, depending on the Big 12 at times. I mean, it is one of the best conferences in all of college basketball. And for Auburn, you look at what the roster holds. It's such a good combination of returning guys, young studs, and transfer portal additions. And with that, you look at the experience factor on this team, one of the oldest in college basketball, depending on whether you're looking at Jani Broome, who stayed, or J.P. Pegues, who transferred in, or guys like that. I mean, this is a well-built team, and I think it's going to take the first 2 months of the season to really figure out what exactly Auburn has and what's going to flow the best, because it's almost overwhelming to look at this and say, man, where do we put all the minutes?
That's what I was going to say. It's first off, it's nice, especially in college basketball, the big plays a so much big factor into every single game. And so when you have a returner like Jani Broome, who is that captain of that team, plays so much better than relying on having your best guard. You know what I'm saying? Just having that big guy plays so much of a bigger impact. And you almost hope what you're saying is true, where it takes a little bit of time for everything to get figured out. Trust me, we've seen it over the past couple of years where everything gets figured out a little bit too early, and then there's no plan B, and as soon as everybody figures out how to stop option A, then it's, oh, shoot, what do we do? And that's referring to when Auburn peaked at number one a couple of years ago in December and January, then all of a sudden you hit halfway through SEC play, and then you go into March, and everybody's figured out how to stop option A. You almost hope that it takes a little bit of time, and I think that's what Bruce Pearl is doing. He understands, A, this team is good enough, but B, this team needs to learn how to win, or they need to learn how to play close games, or they're not going to learn how to win early on. That's why you build such a tough non-conference schedule, because I think he's had teams in the past where he understands we have to play three or four more teams to get us wins, to get us a little bit further in March, get us a little bit of a better ranking rather than this year. He knows what team that he has, and he knows what he has to build it up against, so that way when March hits, when April hits, and hopefully late into April, or late into March, early into April, you're still playing basketball, well, you're facing some of these teams again. You're hoping that you've had some things figured out rather than last year where every win was more than 10. All of a sudden, you play in a close game and you see how it ends up.
Before we get to break, Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network going to join us when we come back. I got a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Back on the football side of things, a conversation we had earlier didn't, I guess, pose this exact question, but I'm glad we got it quickly here. Kiffin, Franklin, or Day? Lane Kiffin, James Franklin, Ryan Day. You have to have a big win. Which coach do you choose? Generic team. I'm not talking their current teams.
This is not a team.
I'm not talking Auburn. I'm not talking any of those teams. You need a big win Saturday of college football, whatever week of the season, generic team versus generic team. You need a big win to get in. Do you choose Ryan Day, Lane Kiffin, or James Franklin?
Are you at home?
Neutral site.
Okay.
Everything is as neutral as it can be.
Oh, man. It is just Coach A going up against Coach B, and you're having to pick the right coach to win you a football game.
I don't know who they're going up against, but I'm, you need a win, biggest win of the year. Again, a win to win the national championship, get to the college football playoff, whatever it may be. Ryan Day, James Franklin, or Lane Kiffin?
Golly.
It's tough. I ain't picking James Franklin. He's never won a big game.
I think I have to go, and it hurts me to say.
Oh, you're going to go a different way.
What are you going to?
Unfortunately, I'm going to say Ryan Day.
That's exactly where I was going to go as well. God. As much as it hurts to say, Lane Kiffin will find himself leading him in the fourth quarter, and his ego will take advantage of him on fourth and five, and he'll turn the ball over and lose by a touchdown.
Lane Kiffin's more on the upset side of things.
Yes.
But if I just need – God, I hate – That's a terrible
Option
answer.
D.
Nobody.
None of the above.
None of the above. Great question. Appreciate that, Eric. We got to get to break. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. And excited to have this guy back on the program. He's with us most Mondays on 3:30 on ESPN 106.7. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. You survived a bye week, my friend. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yes, to survive, and now I'm refreshed and ready to go for this back half of the season. Obviously, looking to close out this road trip in October in a strong way for Auburn football. It started with getting refreshed and really rested up for this upcoming week in Missouri.
Well, there's a lot of questions, right, about Auburn 2-4 going into the bye, but now we're coming out of the bye, and game week is upon us once again. The Tigers back on the road, taking on Missouri in Como, a Missouri team that doesn't look as threatening as they once did, but I still fall in the same line of thinking as I have for quite some time, Hillman. It's not about Missouri. I think it's about what Auburn does this Saturday. So what do you think we're going to see, or what should we see coming out of a bye week like this?
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with you there, because I just think that what you've seen from Auburn is successful offense and defense throughout these games. It's just a matter of getting over that hump and getting a win and finishing the game strong and doing what it needs to do, mistake-free. I thought it was a good start against Georgia. Obviously, Bulldogs are top-five team in the country, so sometimes you can not turn the ball over and still lose, and that's what happened in Athens last Saturday. But I do think it was really good to see the team not turn the ball over, not make too many major mistakes, and really it is about what Coach Freeze said. We talked about it last week, but it's about giving Jarquez Hunter the football, and he is clearly your best offensive weapon, and I think he gives you the best chance to open things up other than running the football and punch it into the end zone. I think what we saw from Peyton Thorne against Oklahoma in that last game at Jordan-Hare Stadium was that this offense can really click when things are rolling. So it starts with the running game. It starts with Jarquez Hunter, but then it does lead to a domino effect where Thorne becomes more successful. You can get the ball to Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb, and they get things going. And then obviously all those freshman receivers. I just think that this team has what it takes. It really is about just taking that next step to winning a game. And who knows what can happen once they see it. It's like a basketball player. I know we'll talk basketball later, but when they see that first shot go through the net, it just something triggers with them. So I'm hoping that can be the case for this football team when they see themselves win.
Well, it doesn't help when you go and play a team like Missouri who just got destroyed 2 weeks ago against Texas A&M and then had a cupcake game. It was on the road at UMass for whatever reason, but Missouri seemed to figure it out and find themselves and get a little bit of a confidence booster before they do welcome in Auburn for an 11 a.m. kick on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was kind of odd just seeing them get off the bus and walk into what looked like a middle school locker room with those facilities up at UMass. It's definitely interesting because what I saw from Saturday on Missouri is, one, the different ways they try to give Luther Burden the football. That's running it, that's passing it to him. But it was also that they didn't play Nate Noel. They said he had back tightness leading up to the game. I don't know if it was truly that or if it was just some load management. But Marcus Carroll got all the carries for Missouri at the running back position. So I would probably expect to see Noel back for this Auburn game. And Burden did leave the game with an injury, but they did say he was going to be fine. So I think this really comes down, starting with the defense against this powerful Missouri offense, it does start with limiting Luther Burden and those playmakers, Nate Noel as well, and not letting Brady Cook get comfortable. I think that when he's comfortable, he's at his best. You look back at that Texas A&M game when the Aggies were able to stifle that offense. It was really tough for them to get things going. They first forced some turnovers, so that would be helpful as well. But I just think limiting Burden on the outside can help a lot because he really is the offense for this Missouri team. Not to say that Nate Noel or Marcus Carroll or any of those other receivers can't do anything, but he is really the catalyst for Missouri. And then offensively, we just talked about it. Give Jarquez Hunter the football. He's going to run really well, and I think it's about getting it in the end zone. I think it helps that this is an 11 a.m. kickoff. I really do. I think that this Missouri crowd is probably going to be they're still a top-ranked team, so
sure.
They have their hopes and dreams for this season, but they're going to have to wake up at some point. I don't know if that'll be at kickoff, so I think a fast start is important for Auburn as well.
Well, I know it was an Auburn bye week, which means you had a little bit of downtime this weekend, and there's no shot you didn't catch at least one good college football game this weekend because there were about a million of them. Your biggest takeaways, whether it's in the SEC or college football as a whole, what'd you think about this weekend of all the results around college football?
Yeah, it's really about the parity in this sport and just how great college football is. This is I don't really say this as hyperbole. I think it's the greatest sport in the world, and it's hard to deny it when you have days that line up like they do on Saturday. All the anticipation going into it was about how great it was going to be, and it lived up to the expectation. And really the only game that didn't was the Red River Shootout in Dallas. So I think that's what's so incredible is you really only have one blowout that you were hoping would be a good game. You go out to the LA Coliseum, Penn State making that incredible comeback against USC. Just across the state, Alabama had to go down to the wire with South Carolina, and then obviously that entire night slate was truly incredible, with Ole Miss obviously going to Baton Rouge, the 100th anniversary, the 100th birthday for Death Valley, LSU wins in overtime. The Colorado game against Kansas State was incredible, and it really was just a great night and day of college football. So I hope it leads into more incredible games as we move along in this season.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us here on ESPN 106.7. Let's flip over to basketball, because there's a lot to get to in terms of Auburn basketball, college basketball. We got an AP poll out today. The KenPom rankings are out today. Your thoughts on Auburn, third in KenPom and 11th in the preseason AP Top 25?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Today really felt like the tomorrow is the SEC media days for SEC basketball. But today really felt like that tip-off for college basketball, where you're in that preseason swing and you're ready for those first games to tip off in that first full week of November. And yeah, I think it's kind of become a trend where the computers do really like Auburn, and that's because of its defense. I think the defense has always been a strong point for Bruce Pearl's teams, and that carries you in those computer ratings. And obviously, I think the offense, I think Auburn's ranked fifth in the offense on kick and palm and third in defense. So that's obviously going to lead to a top rating. So three teams had a top 10 offense and defensive rating. That was the top three teams, according to KenPom, Houston, Duke, and Auburn. So it's going to be really interesting to see kind of how those polls adjust after those first few weeks, because Auburn's going to be playing some of these top-ranked teams in the country. I think on the AP poll, Auburn faces half of the remaining teams. So obviously Auburn's one of them. There's 24 remaining ranked teams, and I think Auburn plays half of them and has potential to play one or two more when they go out to Maui, depending on the results out there. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this first month of the season goes by and where Auburn stands after that, because you're playing the number one team in the country, the number two team in the country, and so on, so on. I guess it depends on what ranking you're looking at. I'm basing it off KenPom. I mean, you're facing the top two teams in that first month of the season. The AP poll is a little bit different. So I think you're going to learn a lot about this team, and this team's going to learn a lot about itself as those first few weeks move on.
I need a player that's a newcomer on this team, whether it's a transfer addition or a freshman that you're most excited about, and then a returnee on Auburn basketball that you're most excited about for 24 and 25.
Yeah, I'm going to start with Miles Kelly as the newcomer. I think him coming from a Power 5, a Power Conference member in Georgia Tech, he's got that experience. He knows what it's going to take to be successful, and just he seems like he's a sharpshooter. I think him combined with, I guess I'll go with my second pick here, Denver Jones at those guard positions, are going to be lethal. I think that they're going to shoot the lights out of some of these buildings, and you're going to really see more of what, you know, Auburn fans saw in the earlier successful days of Bruce Pearl's teams when, yeah, guys, I'm not trying to, you know, put this this nameplate on them, but, you know, like Jared Harper and Bryce Brown, when they get turned on, it is hard to stop. And I think that that's the kind of offense these guys can play, Denver Jones and Miles Kelly, is when the light's on and they're given the green light and they're hot, it's hard to stop. So that's what I expect. I think those two guys can really have a successful season and help Auburn finish where the expectations are. It's interesting because I think in previous years, Auburn's been a little bit underrated. And this year, it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, I think Auburn could easily finish in the top of the SEC, but those are really high expectations. So second in the SEC is not a low expectation whatsoever.
Hey, Jacob. Christian Griffin in here in the station with Jacob Goins this afternoon. It's funny you talk about Bryce Brown and Jared Harper. I saw something this afternoon that said that the last time Auburn was preseason number 11 was that 2019 team. Was that on purpose that you brought that up and just made it look like you were a genius with that comparison? Because I agree with you on the with talking about those two.
Yeah, I'm going to take the credit there and just say that came to the top of my brain. But I knew it was the last time that Auburn was ranked 11th. I think the most interesting thing is that 11th is the highest Auburn's been ranked in the preseason poll, other than 1999 to 2000, and I think 1984 to 1985. So it's unlike Auburn to be ranked this high. And I think that with this non-conference schedule, you're really going to see some movement in the polls, and I think Auburn has a chance to make a very large leap, or I don't think you're going to be hurt too much based off the results of those first several games because of who you're playing, but you have a chance to really vault into that top five by December. So that I think that's what's going to be really interesting is how Auburn handles that if they are to knock off a few of those top-ranked teams.
Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Monday here on ESPN 106.7. And this Thursday is going to be a special day in town. Tip-off at Toomer's. It's the basketball event with the men's and the women's team. And they've got a concert going on downtown. What a wild scene it's going to be Thursday evening in downtown Auburn.
That's right, yeah. If you went to tip-off at Toomer's back in 2018 as well as 2021, I think those were the last two times it was held. Just imagine on a bit of a bigger scale because of the concert with Cole Swindell that's going to be held. There's plenty of opportunities that are plenty of excitement around it. So October 17th, that's this Thursday, tip off at Toomer's. Go to auburnvip.com. There's a lot of different opportunities also to the on-court shoot around, tip off at Toomer's ball kid. You skip the autograph session line. There's all kinds of things you can do on Thursday night and enjoy the basketball and the music. So tip off at Toomer's, pretty obvious. The corner of Magnolia and College, be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to that and everything that's going to go into it.
And then go ahead and plug everything that you have going on this week with the Auburn Sports Network back in action. I know you guys never truly stopped last week, but everything ramped back up this week. Tiger Talk, football broadcast, everything that the people need to know.
Yeah, Tiger Talk tonight at 6 o'clock Central, Wings 94.3 FM. Hugh Freeze, Butch Thompson is going to talk about the exhibition this past weekend against Florida State and Pensacola. Two big wins for that baseball team, previewing the rest of fall ball. Also have Jason Campbell and Will Herring on the program, as well as head softball co-coach Kate Malvo talking about their fall weekend as well. And there's a lot more going on this weekend. We'll have coverage starting with the Auburn Sports Network at Missouri at 8 a.m. Central. Kickoff is 11-ish. We're on ESPN, so that game day crew will probably carry into the
action. Yeah, that's a floating start time.
Exactly. So we'll see whenever they wrap up, and we'll get kicked off in Como. But there's a lot going on in Auburn athletics as well. Auburn soccer, Auburn volleyball continuing their winning ways. Equestrian will be at home this Saturday at 11 a.m. as well. So if you're not in Columbia and you're looking for something to do with the football game going on, Auburn Equestrian Center, the Tigers host the defending national champions SMU for its Breast Cancer Awareness Meet. That's at 11 a.m. at the Auburn Equestrian Center.
And Tiger Talk in studio tonight, is that right?
That is correct. So Wings 94.3 FM is the place to go for Tiger Talk.
Attaboy. All right, Jacob Hillman, thank you so much for your time, my man. Plug it all. Tell people how they can find you and the Auburn Sports Network before we let you go.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU and follow the Auburn Sports Network at AU Sports Network. We'll have all your broadcast details and everything leading up to Auburn, Missouri coming up this week.
My man, thank you for your time. As always, a pleasure to talk to you. Have a fantastic week. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Talk to you guys then. War Eagle.
That's Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins me every Monday at 3:30 right here on ESPN 106.7. Back after this to wrap it all up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Time has flown by today, man. It's been a great show. And we appreciate Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network hopping on with us, talking a little football, a lot of basketball, as the season is basically upon us. He mentioned something that I forgot to mention. SEC Media Day is tomorrow up in Birmingham for SEC basketball. I was wanting to go, but I don't think I could get up there and get back in time for a 2 o'clock show. So looking forward to hearing what Bruce Pearl has to say and what comes out of that and two new programs there, right? Texas and Oklahoma, same way we did with the football media day. So really looking forward to that coming up tomorrow. We'll talk about that on the show. And if you missed any of the show today, lots of college football talk, talked about Auburn coming out of the bye week. Lots more on that throughout the rest of this week, right? We're going to be I don't know if hyping up is not the right way to say it. Previewing, I don't know. Just trying to figure out what the heck's going to happen between now and Saturday, and then ultimately what's going to happen this coming Saturday when Auburn goes to Como. And coming out of the bye week, Christian, we have a few minutes here left in the show. How do you feel about what Hugh Freeze said today in his press conference? I mean, overall, he again mentioned that 27's got to get the football and they've got to coach him harder, and they've changed up kind of the practice, you know, schedule a little bit, and they used it as a time to reflect. He did have a quote saying that somebody asked him about the preparation and the game planning and what the coaches are doing, you know, outside of practice. And he said he couldn't be more pleased with it. Had great things to say about Eli Drinkwitz. Him and Coach Freeze are great friends. I mean, did you take away anything from what he said today?
In a weird way, not really. I feel like it's kind of the same things that A, we've been hearing, or B, want to hear, especially going into the bye week. It is nice hearing that he said things got changed up a little bit, like what we were talking about, where you're getting the guys out of that traditional rhythm that you've gone through the first half of the season, especially when it hasn't necessarily led to success.
Sure.
With the final score on the field, I don't think it's a bold statement to say that Auburn has looked better here in these past couple of weeks and continue to look better each and every week. But I think it's what you needed to hear, what he needed to say. Granted, I don't think next Monday you want to go out and hear the same thing. You can't afford for Auburn and Coach Freeze to go back onto the podium and say, we looked good, it was just frustrating, and you're looking at it, Jarquez Hunter had 13 carries for 80 yards, and Auburn loses by 4 points, and it's, you know, we just couldn't make the right play, we got to coach them a little bit harder. After a bye week, you can accept it, but if Auburn does what they've done through the first 6 weeks and you have to hear it again, then you'll hear more frustration.
Of course, he was asked about the miscommunication on fourth down, and he said, you know, I'm not gonna go deep into that. I know what people say on social media. He said, I don't have social media anymore, which, okay, whatever. He just said, we can't have that. And he said, I think this was to a different question. He said, it's extremely infuriating to have a correct play called and have the right game plan and having guys on the field that don't know what to do in situational football. And I'm sure that is infuriating. But I didn't get a chance to be there live today. I watched it on my computer in my office as I worked. And you know what I verbally said out loud? When a coach says it's infuriating to have guys on the field that don't know what to do in certain situations. You know what I said out loud? That's coaching, bro.
Yeah.
That's your job. That is your job. What do you expect them to do? Go home and YouTube it and figure it out? No. That's your role as the head coach and the coaching staff, is to put them through every single possible scenario imaginable on the football field and make sure they understand it. And if they don't, they don't see the field.
Let there never be a situation that happens on a football field that hasn't been talked about.
Correct.
And you feel like that's almost been the case, to where we haven't necessarily thought about a 4th-and-1, start of the fourth quarter, you're down by 10 points and you have to get a 4th-down conversion here to continue a drive. Where it almost felt like you're being put in that position and it's, I don't know how to react. TB.
And the game and the coaches have to put their players in a position to win the games. I'll say it for the 20 millionth time. This team is not good enough to overcome bad coaching. And that's where Auburn stands at 2-4, heading to Missouri this Saturday.
Three words. Run the football.
We'll have more on that on tomorrow's show. We're back 2-4 right here on ESPN. Shout out to the Orthopedic Clinic sponsoring the second hour of today's show. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Back tomorrow. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.